From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the third day of February, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Registration is open for our Beef House meeting at willag.org. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He'll be at the meeting. He's from agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. We'll take up the weather forecast with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. We'll get an update of the agricultural news for the afternoon and hear about those truckers that have been protesting mandates in Canada, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn today settled at $6.16¾, down 5¾. May at $6.17¼, a nickel lower. In December, new crop corn at $5.68 at a quarter a bushel, 4¾ lower. The March soybeans down a penny at $15.44 at a quarter. May, $15.47, 2½ lower. And November beans, 3 higher at $13.92¾. Bean meal up $2 at $437.10. And bean oil at $65.75, 23 cents lower. Wheat futures, soft red, down 3¼ at $7.51¾. The hard red at $7.69, down a half cent, both of those for the March contract. Live cattle futures at $146.75, 15 cents lower. Feeders down 15 cents as well at $166.72 and a half. And lean hogs for 100 pounds at $98.37½, down 75 cents. Crude oil, $90.21 a barrel, up $1.91. Gasoline at $2.64¼ a gallon. Matt Bennett now joins us from agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Matt, good news. We've opened registration for our Beef House meeting. That's coming up on the 8th day of March. It's a Tuesday, and you will be there. We're so happy that you'll be on hand with us for the return of our Beef House meeting. And this year, we're teaming up with the Farm Doc folks. The Ag Economist from the U of I should be a fantastic meeting. Look forward to having you there and all the rest of the crew over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Yeah, I'm sure looking forward to being there. I don't know how many years in a row while we were able to do it that I'd been there, but it's been several. So I sure enjoyed doing it, and I've enjoyed being a part of it for a long time here.
Anybody who wants to register, it's just $25 this year. Because we teamed up with FarmDoc, we lowered the price. You can register now at willag.org. Let's talk about what happened in Chicago today. It's been pretty interesting. Corn is lower. Why was that the case?
You know, corn really got beat up early on. And part of that was reports, you know, that the Chinese had actually canceled a fair amount of corn, 300 and I believe it was 80,000 metric tons. You know, as far as the way that that manifested itself throughout the day, though, you know, we heard that maybe that wasn't actually the case. So the thing is that, you know, some people think that that was misreported. See, they're on lunar holiday right now, so there's not much communication there. Most of them aren't even going into the office. But the fact of the matter is that was reported initially, 380,000 metric tons, you know, that were canceled for the 21-22 marketing year. Some people think that was actually a purchase of soybeans. So I don't think we're going to know for a few days exactly what happened. That's kind of what got the market heading in the wrong direction. Quite frankly, this week, you know, we were lower there Monday, rallied back Tuesday, lower Wednesday and Thursday. And it certainly looks like the overbought condition, especially in corn, has just kind of gotten to be a little bit too much of a weight here this week.
Yeah, overbought condition. It feels like the fundamentals aren't there to support such a high price. Maybe, I don't know whether there's a lot of air under the market for both corn and soybeans, whether a correction needs to be made. What is your assessment?
Well, you know, when you look, for instance, at March corn, I mean, obviously, we're a ways from it expiring, but it's the closest to expiring. And, you know, basically, you kind of have approached a couple of your moving averages, 10 and 20 day, but you still have room beneath you to get down to the 50-day moving average, which is actually down around $6. So a move towards $6, is that out of the question? Yeah, it's probably not out of the question. Interestingly, you know, this week, obviously, we've been under a little bit of pressure. I've seen a lot of basis levels firming. And so that tells you, obviously, that, you know, maybe some of these originators don't have as much corn as what they would prefer to see. But The thing that we have to be really careful about is the spreads continue to weaken on a day like today. Now you're only running about a 4 cent inverse from March to July, whereas it was 10 or 11 cents just 3 days ago. So with those spreads unwinding, it's telling you that this extreme demand bull market, if you will, maybe isn't quite as bullish as what we were maybe a few days ago. So right now we're kind of in a wait and see mode. What's South America going to look like? You know, how interested are buyers going to be? I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to for both corn and beans, is at what point do people run out of interest to want to be long these commodities that, as you said, are quite high.
Do you think that'll happen for corn or for soybeans first?
You know what? I wish I knew, but my personal opinion, the way this week has manifested itself, corn would be the way to answer that. You know, just based upon what we've already seen, it sure seems to me a couple of these days when corn and wheat were lower, for instance, yesterday, and then beans able to hang in there and close higher, even with double digit gains. That was an impressive move, to say the least. And so when you look at beans, you know, you've basically got a small inverse in the market now from March to July. That hadn't been the case previously. Definitely wanting the beans. And quite frankly, some of your basis levels on beans have been quite impressive, especially along the river. And so, you know, we're seeing a little bit more business on the export front than what we thought we would see. And that does make sense with some of the weather issues South America has had. So for right now, it certainly looks like the bullish bets have been placed as much on beans as corn. That ratio from new crop beans to corn is well over 2.4 to 1, whereas at one time we were bordering on 2 to 1. So it definitely tells you that beans been working overtime to try to buy a few acres, and there's a lot of buyers interested in owning beans still.
Harvest is well underway in the center west part of Brazil, Mato Grosso, about a third of the way done earlier in the week. Do we have an idea of what kind of yields they are bringing in and whether they're off because of the rainfall that they had or simply delayed because of the rainfall that they are having?
You know, we've heard a mixed bag, quite frankly. We've heard some really good yields, and we've heard some yields that weren't so hot. We've also heard some major damage in beans where they had excessive rainfall. So, you know, at this stage of the game, yeah, we're a third done. We're a little bit not far enough along, in my opinion, to get a really good handle on it. But one thing that a person has to pay attention to, you know, is the agencies down in South America. What are they saying about the crop? And certainly the USDA's January numbers are above most of your private estimates by a large margin. It's also a fair amount above CONAB and Sepresa Mercado. So, you know, there's no question that the USDA probably has room to come lower. How much lower is going to be the question? So coming up with world numbers for this February report is certainly a challenge. We came up with our numbers, and we certainly think that they're going to be dropping production, at least to an extent. So it'll be interesting to see just how much they do.
So about a third of the way done in Mato Grosso. I think the whole of Brazil, something like 16 or 17% harvested for soybeans. What numbers do you have for that crop, by the way?
Okay, so for this report, if you will, now you got to remember that you basically have to try to guess what is the USDA going to come up with. And right now we feel like they're going to drop the Argentine corn crop a couple million down to 51, 2.5 million ton lower. And then we think that they're going to drop the soybean crop down to 43.3, which is below the 46.5, I guess, that they had previously. And then on corn, you know, we've got a bit of a drop just down to 112 from January, because we feel like the USDA, you know, was the highest number. And so they're going to have a little bit of room to maybe come down some. And then 133.2 is what we're coming up with for and they were 139 for that Brazil soybean crop. But I would say your average analyst guess, you know, from the information we got, is basically right exactly where we're at, in that 133.65 range. So, you know, there's a lot of folks, the highest estimate we've seen is 137.5, which again is 1.5 million tons below the USDA in January. So these numbers are going to be very closely watched, because, dropping world stocks is certainly going to be something that buyers are going to be paying close attention to.
Hey, thank you so much. We'll talk with you again next week, and looking forward to seeing you at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. By the way, those numbers from USDA are due out next Wednesday. Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, legislators in Washington, D.C. this week urged the Environmental Protection Agency to prioritize the renewable fuel standard by maintaining the blending requirements for 2022. The lawmakers also urged the EPA to deny all pending small refinery exemptions, eliminate proposed retroactive cuts to renewable volume obligations, and set the 2021 RFS volumes at statutory levels. Led by Senators Chuck Grassley, an Iowa Republican, and Amy Klobuchar, a Minnesota Democrat, the lawmakers made the request in a letter to the EPA. Following the request by the lawmakers, the letter says the EPA can quickly restore integrity, stability, and growth to the RFS and the U.S. biofuel sector. Now, many of the letter co-signers are supporters of the Defend the Blend Act, introduced in the Senate by Chuck Grassley and Klobuchar. The legislation would prohibit the EPA from retroactively reducing RVO levels once the annual rule is finalized, and it's also supported by biofuels groups, including Growth Energy. Speaking of Senator Grassley from Iowa, he admits an omnibus spending bill that could have been his ticket for cattle market reform as part of the Livestock Mandatory Reporting Act is now, well, pretty unlikely.
Since there's no agreement between Republicans and Democrats on exactly what should be in the final omnibus bill, there seems to be a general certainty, at least expressed this week in the small groups I've been in, that it's going to kick the can down the road for a short period of time or a long period of time that nobody's determined yet.
That would force Grassley and other Midwest lawmakers to continue to push to be part of separate livestock mandatory reporting renewal or a big tech competition bill like one the Senate passed, but not the House. Meantime, Grassley reminisced with President Biden about earlier cattle market reform efforts during a White House meeting on a Biden pick for the Supreme Court.
He says, I remember you talking about that 25 years ago, and maybe it's been 30 years ago. But the point is that we had trouble with the cattle markets, and people in Iowa felt they weren't getting a fair price. There was manipulation of trading on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and they wanted to be able to sue.
But couldn't, with a Supreme Court decision called Illinois Brick standing in the way. Grassley says he brought up the issue not to win Biden's endorsement on his new cattle market bill, but only to bring attention to the issue decades after Biden learned about it in the Senate. And finally today, the Department of Agriculture this week announced a new USDA Market News mobile application. The app provides producers and everyone else in the supply chain with instant access to current and historical market information. The initial version of the free app includes nearly 800 livestock, poultry, and grain market reports, with additional commodities added throughout the coming year. Producers and other users can search for markets based on their location, by state, or by commodity. They can also add market reports to their favorites for easier access, share reports via text or email, subscribe to reports, and receive real-time notifications when a new report is published. There are both iOS and Android versions available to download through the Apple and Google Play stores. The iOS version is available now. The Android version will be available later this week. Search for USDA Market News mobile application to download the app to your phone today. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, do visit willag.org and get yourself registered today. Don't wait for the Spring Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's just around the corner, March the 8th. It's $25 all day long. You'll be able to talk and listen and hear from the Farm Doc team, the agricultural economist from the U of I, along with the Will Ag panelists you hear each and every day on these programs. It's a great show. And it's a really good meal, all for $25, a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning, a Beef House lunch, the Farm Doc team, the Will Ag panelist. What more could you ask for? Register today at WILLAG. www.ILL.org. Now, you know, we've been hearing a lot in the news about those truckers in Canada. They're protesting vaccine mandates, and while unvaccinated truckers and various other health mandate protesters were stopping traffic in downtown Ottawa, Canada, two border blockades in the Canadian prairie stopped the flow of border traffic and supplies. Dennis Guy reports from the Canadian side of the border.
The two Canada-U.S. ports of entry, one between Alberta and Montana, and the other joining Manitoba and North Dakota, were blocked by unvaccinated protesters late last week. Those mandate protester groups have halted cross-border traffic for 5 days. Ironically, the protesters, which included truckers and farmers, were stopping cross-border trucks from hauling their loads, many of which that deliver to farms and agribusinesses across the prairies. At the beginning of these blockades, there were some members of the general public who were in sympathy with protesters, but as the hours and days went by, much of that sympathy evaporated. Canadian law allows the right to peaceful protest, and Border Services officials and RCMP officers attempted to negotiate with protesters to leave, but mid-afternoon on Tuesday, the Alberta RCMP cited the protest unlawful under Alberta's Critical Infrastructure Defense Act. Jim Ouellette is mayor of Coutts, Alberta, a small village that sits immediately adjacent to the border crossing into Sweetgrass, Montana. Since last week, the village of Coutts has been blockaded by the protesters. Ouellette said he lost patience with the protesters when the situation became a de facto occupation.
I had no gripe with the protest until it became a blockade and an occupation. And it's very ironic that people are willing to take away my freedom of movement and that of everyone else in order to demonstrate for a freedom of movement. It's okay for you, but it's not okay for me. And that's just a silly argument.
Cross-border trucker Corey Kreiderman sympathized with the protesters until their blockade started to cost him money.
Truckers, most of us are paid by the mile, so if I'm sitting here, I'm not making any money to pay my bills. I do kind of sympathize with what they're trying to do, but at the same time, if it's making life difficult for me, then I kind of lose that sympathy.
And Canadian long-haul trucker Robert Sullivan was stuck in a lineup on the Montana side of the border for 5 days. Sullivan says that with that delay, he'll now have to sit for another day and a half in order to drive legally.
We have to run on logbooks. We have a certain amount of hours that we can drive each day and for each week. I am out of hours. I've got a total of 4 hours and 58 minutes of drive time left before I have to shut down for 36 hours.
Many of the protesters have now dispersed. However, some protesters refused to leave, and secondary blockades were set up further to the north of Coutts. Charges under Alberta's Critical Infrastructure Defense Act and the Transportation Act have been laid, and some protesters could be facing fines of $25,000. Reporting from Canada, I'm Dennis Guy.
Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenere. He's at tstorm.net. Thank you so much, Mike, for being with us today. I'd like you to get started right away. We'll begin in Argentina, please.
That sounds great, Todd. They've been pretty dry in Argentina over the course of the growing season. The only exception to that was around 2 to 3 weeks ago, where we saw some pretty good rains that started in the middle of January and then continued for a little while. Ever since then, it hasn't been raining very much, and even though we will see a few thunderstorms over the next couple of days, it's going to dry out a lot once we get into the weekend and especially next week. It's also going to turn a lot warmer once we get into the second part of next week, so the forecast is essentially for drier than normal weather with some heat on the back end. The potential problem with this is that if we don't see a lot of rain later on in February, we're going to end up in a situation where we basically were dry over the first part of the growing season, saw some okay rains in the middle of the growing season, but then as we move into the latter part of the growing season, we're still dealing with this long-term drought. And so this is a concern because the only way to get out of this situation for soybeans is to see a lot of rain in the month of February, and at least the first half of the month is not going to be that way.
And what's your assessment of conditions in Brazil as of today?
Brazil is in a similar situation in that they were very dry for most of the growing season. In fact, Paraná and Paraguay, which is right next to southern Brazil, each had their driest November 1st through January 31st period in more than 35 years of record. And Rio Grande do Sul, which is also a key soybean player in the South America market, had their number two driest over that same period, and they only were just a fraction wetter, or else they would have been number one driest as well. So this is just an unusual drought that's been taking place in southern Brazil. At the exact same time, as you move further to the north, those key northern areas have been wet. It's interesting to see that while we were dealing with one of the worst droughts on record in southern Brazil and Paraguay, we were dealing with one of the wetter growing seasons on record in Goiás and Mato Grosso. So a very sharp delineation between drought and wetness across the soybean crop in Brazil. As we go forward, we're going to be harvesting these soybeans, so the weather is not quite as important as it has been. What's more important now is the second crop, corn. That crop is being planted now, and it's going to continue to be planted into next month. It looks like we'll see scattered rains here and there, so we don't anticipate any major problems for second crop corn. That season will become a little bit more important once we get into the middle of March and then into April.
Here in the United States, across the Midwest, of course, we've had a great deal of snow. That storm developed in the southern plains. I'm wondering what conditions are now like for the hard red winter wheat growing regions there and through Kansas and Nebraska.
Well, very doubtful they saw much of anything from this system. I mean, there was several inches of snow across a big chunk of Colorado, the southern half of Kansas, and also parts of Oklahoma and Texas. But the heavier totals were to the east of Interstate 35, which is generally to the east of where most wheat is produced. And the bigger issue is that there's no more follow-up rains or snows on the way. We're going right back into that dry pattern that we've been dealing with now for the better part of 6 months. And eventually this is going to become a bigger story, because if we stay dry through the month of February, and again, it looks pretty dry over the next couple of weeks, then that weather, once we get into March, is going to become important, and certainly by April. So we're dealing with a fairly significant drought across the plains, and there's no signs of it breaking at the moment, even though we did see some light snow over the last 24 to 36 hours. But as you noted, most of that storm was a little bit further to the east and not directly affecting hard red winter wheat.
One last question for you, Mike, if you would, please. Have you thought much about whether the drought that's been taking place in the plains might spread into other parts of the nation through the spring months?
There's not a real strong connection between what's happening out there and what's going to happen in the Corn Belt later on. We can just take a few examples and kind of discuss that. But in the 2012 year, which was the big drought in the Corn Belt, it actually was an okay growing season out in the plains. They had some decent rains throughout most of the spring. So there wasn't a big clue of what was about to happen from that. If you go back to some other years, like 1995, that was one of the wettest seasons on record, at least one of the wettest springs on record across the plains, and that led to one of the hottest summers on record in the Corn Belt. So it's actually a little bit opposite of what you might think. But the point is that there's not a strong correlation between what's happening there now and what's going to happen in the Corn Belt later. So I wouldn't read into it a whole lot.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Glad to have you on the show again.
Yep, great being here.
That's Mike Tenere. He's with tstorm.net. That's T-Storm Weather. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find a way to register for our spring outlook that's coming up at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's Tuesday, March the 8th. We just put the tickets on sale, and they're only $25. If you've not ever attended, it's worth the drive, because in the morning, and we start at about 8 o'clock our time opening the doors, there'll be, of course, a Beef House roll and coffee, and then a Beef House lunch at the noon hour as well. All the details at willag.org.